your children at the point. If you consider yourselves religious, if you consider yourselves good at core, know that there are times such as these where you are defined as either a person with rote, empty phrases or a person that stands up and acts when other people are in harm's way. The majority of people in this country, unfortunately, are as cattle. The majority of the people will step right over five-year-old children and their families on their way to a day in the park. Where do you fall today? Where do you find yourself? Are you a person that actually believes human beings matter, or that you just return empty phrases and think that that is enough to this world to count as a good human being?
We are down at Pier 33 on the San Francisco Bay, where boat workers for the Alcatraz cruises have been locked out for a period of time now. And there is a picket line with about 25 people.
We believe that the rule of discrimination and the fight against discrimination in employment should be well beyond this point. We believe that discrimination should not be tolerated simply because you can argue that you replace those discrimination victims with friends and family.
Okay, we're down here at Pier 33, and can you tell us what's going on here?
Well, we've been down here for over 4 months now on this picket line, and what's going on is that we have a longtime Republican contributor, Terry McRae, who owns the company Hornblower, and the Bush administration has seen fit to grant him a contract wiping out 50 jobs, 50 longtime union jobs on the Alcatraz Ferry Service, and we're trying to get those people reinstated in their employment.
So what's been going on in this last 4 months? What have people have been doing to struggle to get these jobs back?
Well, we have a resolution of support for our fight and our boycott from the Berkeley Labor Commission. We have a resolution of support from the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Nancy Pelosi's been helping us. I myself have approached Carol Migdon and seeking aid. There are many different political avenues, and we brought down as many as 5,000 to 7,000 people here on January 27th when we linked up with the anti-war march. It was Stop the War at Home and Stop the War Abroad. This represented the war at home here, and we brought over 5,000 people to his gates, closed the Embarcadero for 2.5 hours.
Wow. So what's going on here today?
This is our regular Sunday picket where we come down and let the people know what's going on. There's an interesting and sad irony here. In our fight against Hornblower, when we charged him with discrimination to the National Labor Relations Board, their argument, their response was that discrimination should be perfectly accepted as long as a certain amount of acquaintances and family replace those discrimination victims. So at the same time that the NLRB enshrined discrimination into their ruling, they also told us that once our appeals are exhausted, we will have but a limited period of time to get our message across, not to exceed 30 days. So we will be, our First Amendment rights of assembly and speech will have a 30-day expiration date.
Or what will happen?
Or else the weight of the federal government will come down and put fines against us. Who knows, possibly jail. But we won't be allowed to have signs, as the First Amendment of the Constitution would imply. We won't be allowed to assemble in more than maybe one or two people at a time, which the First Amendment should protect. And yet, in the same ruling, as I say, they were told that discrimination is okay if you replace those discrimination victims with family and friends.
Are these family and friends of who?
Of Terry McRae and Hornblower. And actually, it's just a very loose chain of acquaintanceship that he replaced these people with. He would ask somebody if he knew somebody, and then that person would be hired off the street. And yet, that was enough to overcome discrimination laws as far as the federal government was concerned. We think it's shameful.
Can you tell us a little bit about the union jobs that were once here?
Well, since the 1970s, when Alcatraz first became a tourist destination, this has been an unbroken chain of union membership and union work. And we have people down here of 20 and 30 years of experience on this run, with good benefits and decent living standards. And I'm a second generation Alcatraz Ferry employee myself, so I was put through school through these benefits and these wages. And now, all of a sudden, because of the Bush administration and his connected crony here, the San Francisco waterfront is experiencing its first assault on the solid union membership of the ferry runs.
How have the locked out workers and their families been dealing with this financially and otherwise since this has happened?
I know in one case, a man who had to move to Alaska and buy a hot dog cart, working on the street to sell hot dogs in Alaska. That was the only way he could see to start protecting himself and take care of his family. Other people have just drifted away. We've lost contact. Many of them are down here on the picket line fighting and not taking no for an answer when it comes to the oppression and the shameful treatment that we've suffered at the hands of this company and the hands of the federal government.
How can people, the community of San Francisco and the Bay Area, continue to support the workers here?
Well, there is an ongoing boycott sanctioned by the California Labor Federation and the San Francisco Labor Council. You can certainly write letters to politicians, to Gavin Newsom, ask him where he's been. He's been conspicuously absent. You can certainly tell your friends and family, don't ride Hornblower, don't go to Alcatraz until they start treating their people humanely, as is the norm on this waterfront. That would not be the anomaly. Everybody else seems to be able to treat their employees decently on this waterfront. It's Hornblower through the Bush administration that seeks to be the anomaly.
Are there other unions that have come and shown support here?
Yes, we've had as many as 60 or so unions at a time, because we've had as many as 60 union members down here at a time at some of our mass rallies. So one time we brought down nearly 1,000 people, another march we brought 600, and another one, as I say, we linked up with the war movement and we brought 5,000 to 7,000 people to escape. One thing I should mention too, which is worth noting, is that this isn't a question of resources or finances or cheaper tickets for the traveling public. When the union company up the street did it, it was $16.50 a ticket. This guy immediately raised the ticket price to $21.75 and was seeking to raise it to $27 and $28 by July. We have frozen that in court cases. Right now, these people that are crossing our picket lines are getting a $6 discount because of our efforts. So they should come out and say thank you to us on the way out.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, one thing I'd like to add, I guess, if I had to sum it all up, is that it's a real eye-opener seeing how few people really care about human beings in three dimension and are willing to cross a picket line when it's made clear as to what's going on out here. So many people are willing to go sit in a building one day a week and memorize phrases and read from certain books, and then when it comes time and they see people in harm's way, they step right over them on their way to a day in the park, and I think that's a shame.
Right on. Well, continue the struggle.
Yeah. And in case you're interested, my name's Robert Estrada. I'm Inland Boatman's Union, and I've been a 21-year member of Alcatraz, as I say, and I'm second-generation Alcatraz employee. And here I am walking a picket line, so thanks a lot.
And these pickets happen every Sunday?
Yeah, every Sunday, 10 to 12, until the federal government stomps down on us, as they've threatened to do. Like I say, they want to put an expiration date of 30 days on our freedom to assemble and freedom of speech. So this is where we sit.
Well, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay, so tell us what's going on.
Well, we have, at the moment, today, Sunday, we're having our regular Sunday picket down here at Pier 3331, where the docks, where the ferries for Alcatraz depart from. We do a picket here on Sundays. We also do it on weekday mornings. Most weekday mornings we have a smaller picket down here also. And we're here to demand that Alcatraz Cruises recognize the workers that worked on these boats since 1973 and the unions that represent them, the Inland Boatman's Union and the Master Mates and Pilots.
So how long has this been going on? 4 months?
Yeah, about 4 months. Since September 25th, 2006 is when this operation started. Though, of course, we knew that Alcatraz Cruises Hornblower got the contract to operate the service from the Park Service about a year prior to that. So this has been going on since, at least we've known about it, since 2005.
So what's it looking like in the future? How can workers get their jobs back here?
Well, that's a very good question. And, you know, it really depends. I mean, there's lots of different, you know, there's different angles. There's basically, we have some influence on the federal level. We've had Nancy Pelosi has been able to hold up ticket price increase, $5.25 increase which was money that would have gone directly into Hornblower's pocket. So that's a significant economic impact, you know. I don't think they're quite selling out today, but on the day that they do sell out, you know, it's about 4,000 people. So that's $20,000 on a sold-out day that they lose from the ticket price. But, you know, for myself... And I think that's all good, and you should do that. And, you know, trying to find out how the Park Service awarded this contract, you know, whether they're going to follow through with some of the, you know, things that Hornblower said that they were going to do, which is supposedly this month, February, they were supposed to start constructing a, what they call, a gateway experience, sort of a fancy interactive thing that you go through before you get on the boat. That was part of their proposal that won them the bid from the Park Service, and there doesn't seem to be any movement on that. And we got to ask, why isn't the Park Service demanding that they follow through on what they said that they were going to do? Yeah, so we can pursue that on a federal level. Also, you know, we get the city to pass resolutions, the Board of Supervisors pass resolutions, whatever. But ultimately, really, the thing that I believe will win it is the ability for us to have to really to shut this thing down, to actually get enough people down here. And we've had people down here. We had the anti-war march come down here, but we haven't had the those folks that need to call for, okay, we're willing to take that risk and go in there and not worry about the legalistic issues and just go in there and shut it down. That will bring, you know, the issue to a head, I believe. And that hasn't happened yet, and there's, you know, various reasons for that. There's a desire among some people to take that kind of action, but of course, you know, that would be considered illegal, and that makes a lot of people very nervous taking things like that. But myself, I personally believe that unless we take those types of actions, it's going to be very difficult to achieve a significant victory.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the solidarity between the anti-war movement and worker movement here?
Well, it was very significant that the anti-war movement on the... hold on, let me just take... Can you hold up for a second? I got to take it. Peter!
Okay, can you tell us how do those bonds have been created between the anti-war movement and workers here?
Well, basically, we have a committee, a rank-and-file committee, workers from the ferries and the unions, plus other supporters from other unions and just from the community at large that meets on a regular basis, and one of the participants, one of the members of that committee, went to a meeting of the folks that were organizing locally the anti-war march for January 27, and made a proposal that they have that march terminate here at our picket line, and that was adopted by the folks who were organizing the march, and consequently we had, you know, several thousand people down here joining us on a picket line and making that connection between you know, the labor movement and the anti-war movement. Again, my personal view is that you know, labor has the ability to say end this war literally tomorrow if they wanted to. If organized labor came up and said, "Hell with it, we're not going to go," you know, we're going to even just some of the key industries, even if the key industries like longshore and trucking and a few others said, we're not going to go to work until, you know, the Congress makes a decision to cut off funding for the war, that would happen, you know. That's, they have that power. The labor, even though it only represents about 12% of the workforce, they're still organized in some of the key industries, and they certainly have the ability to have that kind of economic impact. And I think the best illustration of that was, I don't know if you're around, but in 2003, when the war began, there was a massive picket of two terminals in Oakland, American President Lines, which has significant military contracts, and Stevedoring Services of America, which is the largest American stevedoring company. They also happened to get a no-bid contract at that time to manage the port of Umm Qasr in Iraq, near Basra, right? And so the anti-war movement, or a segment of the anti-war movement, decided that that was a legitimate target for a mass picket. And so there was one organized very early on the morning of April 7th, 2003, about 500 pickets, anti-war protesters, and lots of them were union members as well. And what happened was the Oakland police, in conjunction with an outfit called the California Anti-Terrorism Information Center, who had been spying on the email lists of folks who had been organizing this demonstration. The Oakland police opened fire after a couple hours of pickets with what they call less than lethal weapons, sending about 40 people to the hospital and arresting about, I can't remember, 25 or 30 people being arrested. And what that illustrates to me very clearly is the seriousness that the state takes when the anti-war movement and those who are opposed to the policies of the state in waging war recognize how important it is to intersect at the key elements of the economy, which is the shipping industry. I mean, it is so important, and that's the key nexus of shipping and trucking and transport is literally at the docks, and that's why we had the demonstration, and therefore that's why the response of the state was so brutal and oppressive. I mean, a week, 2 weeks previous to that, there'd been 10,000 people in downtown San Francisco shutting down San Francisco and blocking corporate headquarters, and there were many arrests from civil disobedience, but you didn't see the type of violent repression that you saw on the docks, and I believe that's because the connection between attacking the nexus, like I said, of the capitalist system at its transport hub is more threatening to the state than blocking streets and blocking corporate front doors, even though that's a very important tactic and should be used and encouraged. But when you go after the direct economic functioning of the system, that's when the system will crack down the hardest. And therefore, you know, that's why it's so important for the anti-war movement to hook up with the labor movement, because we're talking about that connection, that ability to make the connection between the ability to impact directly at an economic level, you know, instead of just using moral persuasion or civil disobedience to block a street. When you go after the actual functioning of the economic system, that has the greatest potential impact. And again, that's illustrated by the response of the state when workers and those who are opposed to the war come together.
Well, it seems like the picket here at Alcatraz Ferries is having an economic impact. And I heard from Robert that the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, is going to possibly make it so you can't picket here or something?
Well, what would happen is we had brought two NLRB charges against the employer, and the employer brought one against us. And that was about a four-month process, three-and-a-half-month process, the end of which was this dismissal of those charges by the NLRB, costing the unions well over $100,000 in the process, right? And once those are dismissed, and I don't quite understand the ins and outs of the legal arguments, but apparently once those are dismissed and finished with, at that point, the employer has the ability to go to a judge to ask for an injunction against the picketing based on the fact that we're having an impact on them, right? That hasn't happened to date because we appealed the dismissal of those NLRB charges. But once that appeals process has exhausted itself, apparently the employer then will have the ability and will likely go to court to get an injunction against picketing, which is also a common tactic used by employers in a dispute, you know, when you have an impact. When you have an impact, if you don't have an impact, they're not going to do it. But if you have an impact, they'll go to a judge, and the judge, you know, and the laws are written in the favor of property and capital, and the judges, you know, the vast majority of judges in the judicial system represent those interests, and they're not going to come out and represent the interests of those who are trying to defend their livelihoods.
So what are the workers going to do here if they do get an injunction?
That is a good question also. I mean, it's partly up to, unfortunately, it's some of it is, or a lot of it is up to the leadership of our organizations here. And what they're willing to do, you know. I mean, our workers, most workers, or some workers will be willing to say we should defy those injunctions, but it's very rare that labor organizations are willing to take that step, because then they are subject to punitive fines. I mean, in the past, the ones cases I've been familiar with, when a union defies an injunction, is often a fine that's doubled every day. Until it's resolved. I mean, and so that means usually unions are very reluctant to defy injunctions, because if you start out with a $5,000 fine and then double that every day that the injunction's being violated, you can see that that quickly becomes a huge cost to the union. And of course, there's ways to fight that. I mean, my position would be, well, what you do is you keep up the pressure until they come to meet, and when you negotiate with them, you know, you say part of the negotiation would be, we're not going to go away until you drop those fines. For the same reason, we're not going to go away until you sign the contract, and part of the contract will be you'll drop all the fines. I mean, that can be done, but it takes a lot of political will among the leadership of the trade unions, and it takes a significant mobilization of the rank and file. And at this point, I don't see those objective conditions existing for that type of scenario to unfold.
What about the rank-and-file workers who have lost their jobs here?
Well, a lot of them are going looking for other jobs. I know of one person who lost her job, and she recently took a job on a ship out of Hawaii. I mean, people have to make a living, you know, and they can do this stuff for a while, and we've been out here for 4 months, but that's part of the problem with, like, the National Labor Relations Board and the legalistic sort of methods. It takes a long time, and people have to pay the rent, you know, so people will eventually start trying to find another way to get by, and once they get another job somewhere, they're not going to be available to do this, so that's what happens. I mean, that's why shut the damn place down right away, then, you know, you get that taken care of.
Well, what's it going to take to shut the place down?
That's the $60,000 question, and if I had the answer, we'd be there, you know. I mean, I have my own ideas, but, you know, I mean, like I said, just mobilizing folks to get out here and marching in there and shutting it down and, you know, take the hits, whatever they are, the arrests and fight the lawsuits and all that, but that hasn't been the will of enough people to make that happen.
Yet, anyways, right?
What's that?
Yet, anyways.
Yet,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Hope springs eternal.
Right on. Well, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
I would invite anyone who wants to come down here every Sunday, anyway, 10 o'clock, and to put March 25th on the calendar. It's not a definite yet, but we're hoping to plan a larger demonstration on March 25th, which I think is a Sunday. It might be a Saturday, but the weekend of March 25th is what we hopefully will have another big action down here.
And where can people go to get more information about the struggle?
Well, we have a website, AlcatrazUnion.com. That's probably the best place to go for information. And if anyone's interested in joining in support, we have regular support committee meetings. The Waterfront Workers Solidarity Committee meets most Sundays at 1 o'clock at 450 Harrison Street. But to confirm that sometimes we meet every week, sometimes every other week, depending on what's in the pipeline for actions. And if you really are interested in doing that, the best way to find out specifically about the date would be to come down to our regular Sunday picket and talk to one of the pickets, and they'll point you out to someone who is on that committee and would be able to plug you in.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. We've lost our jobs, about a third to almost a half. This company has come in, he's bid for the Park Service, promising a solar sailor boat that's supposed to be sun-powered. They haven't done that. It's not even in the works. And underneath all that, they just have regular engines that they're going to put. And raising the price, like, at least $5 or $6, $7. I think it was $18 or $19 when we had it. And now it's like $22, $24, and he wants it up to about $27. Plus the fact that he hasn't hired union workers that have been there for over 30 years. I've been there since 1976. And hasn't hired. They've all hired unemployment, and we've put an injunction on them to make sure that they pay the same as union wages. The thing is that you can't live in San Francisco without, you know, without $8.50 wages. So and no bennies. And they have hired like two or three union people, but they haven't. Having the same pay raise, and what they do now is they pay them the union wages, but they don't hire them for 40 hours. So there's no benefits for them, and, you know, they're out of jobs. And I really think that, you know, he should have at least hired the rest of us, you know, and put us to work instead of hiring non-union workers. I think unions are very important. They help the middle class. They are the middle class, and that's the cause of the middle class. And that's about it. Got any more questions?
Do you have anything else you'd like to add? What do you see happening here in the future? How can people continue to support your efforts?
I think to write or email the Park Service, Washington, Pelosi, our mayor, and all the leaders, and tell them about the situation and, you know, what union. And come down and help us and have them hire union workers, our workers.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know if that was...
Okay, so it just sort of seems to me that all he wants is to build his kingdom up and have slaves, you know, working, you know, under... you know, general wages that should be for the area. This morning I was watching the news about Nigeria and the beautiful, wonderful oil wells that are coming out of there, the oil that's coming out of there. And they're having oil wells underneath the river. It's taken away all the fishing, most of the fishing industry. These people up and down the river are hurting for food and livelihood and, you know, sending their kids to school. Meanwhile, it's over, you know, billions of dollars industry, and these people are starving to death. It's another cause of, you know, bigger business eating up the, you know, the local people. And, I mean, it maybe won't hurt them today, but it's definitely hurt them later. And that's all. And it'll hurt us definitely for sure. That's it. I think this scares me. This little piece right there. Okay, thanks very much. And who are you from, anyway?
Berkeley Liberation Radio.
Oh, okay, great. All right.
Thank
See you later. Bye-bye.
Wouldn't you all be interested in talking on the radio about the situation down here?
We're from out of town.
Yeah. It's all we heard is just what he said, kind of, about it. And I kind of half heard it.
Yeah. So. Well, what do you think about... what you heard.
I just heard there was an accident. Yeah. That's all.
I heard I wish I was on that boat to make some of that money.
Let's duck in the coffee shop. Right.
Thanks anyway.
Thank you. Sorry.
Hey, would any of you all be interested in talking on the radio about the situation down here?
No.
No? Would any of you be interested in talking on the radio about the situation here? Today?
We had 5,000 to 7,000 people here at this meeting.
protesting the shameful treatment of these good people. The embarcadero here was closed for 2.5 hours while this mass protest spoke out against the oppression, favoritism, and the cronyism that led to Alcatraz giving the contract to Hornblower, which in turn led 50 people being
Are you with the union?
No.
Are you trying to interview people here?
I'm a reporter, and I'm trying to get a story.
Have you talked to the people here to get permission to do this?
Their permission.
I'm talking about the landowners.
I would like to talk to them, actually.
You are going to have resulting problems in such an operation as this.
This one right here on this side of the fence?
In this case, possible overflow of giant human waste holding tanks on Alcatraz. Gangway leaping from the vessel while tied at Alcatraz. The passengers aboard. Accident underway.
I'm curious what you think about what's going on here today.
Oh, I can't have any comments on that. If we can ask you to step outside, we can't have anybody else press.
No press here?
No press on board. If you'd like to talk to one of our representatives, we can have somebody out here.
Okay, I would like to.
You should interview him outside the gate. Right. You're going to have to interview him. You're going to have to interview him outside the gate.
So this is private property.
Okay. What are your thoughts on private property?
And the man seeks to raise the price at the 27, and only our lawsuits have prohibited this. So you, as you step over our families and step over our children on your way to a day in the park, you should know that we've saved each of you $6 on the ticket price, so you can thank us on the way out.
How are you doing today? Do you have any thoughts about what's going on here today?
Outside the park.
About $1,800 a month.
So what are your thoughts about this?
I'm just doing my job.
Well, what do you think about these people's jobs?
They're doing their job.
But they lost their jobs.
I'm neutral on it.
Neutral? You're a worker, right?
Be careful, John. Be careful out there, man.
Godspeed, John. Godspeed.
Godspeed, John.
So you don't have any? You don't?
I just said I'm neutral.
Neutral? What does your employer think about this then?
You'll have to ask him.
Alright, have a good day.
Represent the family. In most cases, represent children. Terry McRae's Hornblower sought to assail these families and their children. He did so at the home of the American Labor Movement.
Some of them will go.
San Francisco waterfront.
Go to Sausalito. Vale la pena. Porque esa compañía, ellos no quieren comprar nadie, nada. Mira, tenemos 9 meses aquí esperando para un contrato nuevo. Ellos están pagando los empleados medio. Ustedes pueden recibir su dinero aquí y pueden ser a Sausalito. Es un pueblo que vale la pena.
Intolerable and certainly not defensible.
So I'm guessing not allowed on the private property.
You should call the police if they don't want to give you a ticket. You got to give you a ticket for the next hour.
Another.
Jeez, boy, what did I have?
There's also just past that's Pier 39 where all the flags are, and just next to it is Pier 41.
I don't think it's about an hour and a half to get to it.
No,
it will. Don't.
Oh, and you have to pass shops, you mean?
No, just...
You do have to pass some shops.
But besides that, you can also, like, take the ferry to Sausalito, which is sort of a nice little town to go to. On a day like today, it is a nice day to do that. And that's, like, $17 round trip per person. You know, and you get over there, you can spend as long as you want. I'm not sure what the actual schedule is off the top of my head. There's also, that same boat also goes to a little town called Tiburon, so you can actually go to one and catch a later boat and go to the next one.
Is that further north of San Rafael?
No, no, it's south of San Rafael.
Okay.
It's just a little south. It's about a 25-minute
I used to live in San Rafael 20-some million years ago.
Yeah, okay.
when rent was still $7.50 for a small one-bedroom apartment in a hole in the ground.
Right.
Yeah.
Those days are long gone.
Yeah. $7.50 would be really nice, huh?
I don't even think about that.
I think that's what they're charging homeless people who sleep in their car out there.
Yeah, right.
Which union are you in?
Local 174.
What do they do?
United Parcel Service.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
UPS.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Is that local here? No,
it's Seattle.
Oh, yeah. Seattle. Oh,
UPS
got
started in Seattle.
We're a part of the
thank you.
So not everybody is getting on the ferry boat today. Some people are being persuaded not to.